Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Welcome to Drinking Bros. We got one of our faves on the show, Dakota Meyer. Look at that. There it is. Are you on his angle, Giorgio?
It's me.
Yeah,
it's
look at him.
Me. Is it
drink
me?
Him in.
Am I one of the favorites?
Drink him in.
Drink
yes.
him in.
Well, you're not one of our favorites. You're one of the audience favorites.
Oh, I gotcha. I was going to say, Dan, you've never told me I was one of your favorites.
I would never say anything like that to anyone. Even if it were true, I wouldn't say it out loud. Come on.
Wow.
How long have you known me?
Way to
say shit like that.
Way to start
yeah,
off.
Yeah, way to start, kids. We get a hot start here today. A lot going on in the world, but I want to take a moment to thank Dakota Meyer for having us over at his house. He had a nice little welcoming to Austin party for us. A little welcoming party.
You know, honestly, I just appreciate you all blessing me with your presence.
It was nice. We had fun. We had the kids together up at your house.
Yeah, it's so awesome, man.
Driving up to your house is like driving up to like a movie set, I feel like.
Oh my gosh.
It is.
Can we talk about it? I'll be honest. Absolutely. But I'll be honest. I never thought you guys would move here. I thought, like, you know, when you called me and you're like, oh, so I just want to let you know we're moving to Austin. I was like, okay. And then the pandemic hit and I'm like, never happening. Never happening. And then you guys are really here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the best thing ever. It's the best news ever.
It's the greatest thing ever. And we're amped about it. It was one of those things where, look, by now you know Rogan's moving here, and I think Fighter and the Kid is moving. A bunch of podcasts are moving here. Our advertisers are here. There was a couple deals in the works that were like, hey, guys, we would like to make Austin kind of the hub of podcasting. You know, we're one of the biggest shows. Luckily, thank you to everybody who listens. And it was one of those things where it was now or never, because Dan and I host the sports show in the fall, and we typically do live shows all over. There is no sports. There's no fans. So we had to pack up our shit, and it was not pretty, was it, Dan?
No.
We left some shit. I think we hurt some feelings is what we did.
I'm a good color guy. Yeah, we look, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to talk shit. But we didn't get what we expected out of a place. And to me, that's just like, all right, cool. Fuck you, too.
Yeah. All I'll say is this. There's a bunch of Drinking Bros memorabilia, booze, half-drank booze, maybe 4,000 White Claw cans, and maybe some drugs laying around the office. But classic Drinking Bros fashion, we left it like a fraternity house.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, we did.
It wasn't that bad.
No?
Homeboy sent me pictures the other day, and he goes, hey, is it okay if I give out all your socks, like, to make up for the extra money? And I was like, yeah, no problem. What's what extra money? And he's like, we're going to have to call a cleaning crew in here to clean this
up. If we hadn't, like, been rushing out of town, like, if I had issues with my movers, it would have taken, like, an hour to clean that place out. So that guy can get fucked.
Dan, hey, how much to charge for you to do all my customer service? It seems like
it's 1-888 get fucked. That's the right amount of fucking numbers too.
It is.
So that's not the right amount, but you know, it could be F-U-C-K-D maybe.
No, yeah,
that's
still not whatever.
Right. Tomato.
Close enough. Maybe take out the ED and just put, you know, get fuck.
That's weird. No,
hey, I would get fuck.
Yeah,
I like get fuck.
Maybe F-U-C-T. There were shirts back in the day called something fuck.
That's right. You're right. Yeah. I remember that. There was a website too. That was pretty huge. But no, you had us over your house. It was awesome, man. And that was the first time it kind of felt like home here. So we appreciate it.
No, I appreciate
you. Barbecue at your house.
You guys are the coolest people I know. So absolutely. You know, like, I don't have many people come over. I think someone identified this, Dan, and you know, you're probably the best on this piece. Someone identified and they called me a closet introvert. What do you think?
Yeah,
you think
I mean, look,
a possibility?
An introvert, people misunderstand what those words introvert and extrovert mean a lot. So an introvert doesn't necessarily mean that when you get in front of people, you freeze up or you don't like being in front of people. What it means is you get your energy from being alone or with a small group of people.
Yeah. Right?
So when you are around a lot of people all the time,
it sucks it out of you.
It makes you feel exhausted.
Yeah.
Right. But whereas an extrovert would get energy from that.
Yeah.
And they would feel bored or complacent or something when they're only around one or two people.
No, not me.
Right. So, yeah, you're not a closet introvert.
I found that out.
Really?
Yeah. So, but like the cool part is like you guys are one of, I think you, there's no, by no means has there been more than, that's probably the third time I've ever done that. And the other time I did it with you and Jesse, we had steaks there. Right. So
yeah.
I think there might've been one time outside of you all where people have came to my house and we've ate out and had that.
No shit.
Yeah. I don't.
Oh, see, it just seemed like you did it all the time. So
no.
I didn't know.
Well, that's because Mandy does such a good job at
She's
that.
Great. Yeah. Mandy's the best. I offered to double her pay to leave. But,
whoa.
Yeah. I was like, hey.
No, but I appreciate you guys coming over. It's always fun. Like, you have such great kids. Your kids are so fun. Like, your wife is badass. So it makes it, you know, it makes it so easy to hang out. I mean, the hardest part is just hanging out with Dan, right? Like, yeah.
It's tough, man. Because I'm like a lot of people. I'm like being around a lot because I'm so boisterous and outspoken and lively.
Yeah.
So it feels like you're around a crowd, even if it's just me.
It does. It does. Actually, it feels like with you, it feels like being around a bunch of protesters.
Yeah. Well, I am thinking about joining Antifa, but I can't figure out where to sign up.
It's tough. And look, we might as well get to that because Trump's speech was last night, which was flawless, by the way. I think he needed it. And
he must have read off the teleprompter.
Well, here's the beauty of what happened last night because of the pandemic, right? The Democratic National Convention was taped. It was all Zooms, and it was like a Zoom contest, it felt like, where it was like, hey, guys, we're doing this. Trump was at the White House. He had 1,000 people there in the front yard, essentially. No mask. Not one single person was wearing a mask. And he had a crowd for the first time in a very long time. The magic of Trump in 2016 was the fact that when you went to these rallies, you know, and I went to a few, I don't know if you did or not, it was electric. It was like a fucking rock concert. And I think what he's been missing and what he's been criticized for the last few months for his speeches is there's no people. So he doesn't have any crowd to feed. Yeah, he doesn't have the energy to feed off of. Whereas last night he did. The weather was perfect. The setting in front of the White House, which you never get to see. I don't think we've ever seen that in the history of our country, where a president is giving a speech in front of the White House to 1,000 people in the front lawn, was amazing. And he was able to feed off of them because they were cheering and standing up and all that stuff. Like it was, you know, a real crowd. And he was able to ad lib again. So he was able to tell jokes during the teleprompter shit, which is, if you have a teleprompter, you've ever had to use one in this life, you need to be so good at it that you're able to add things and know what the speed of it is. You're a public speaker.
Yeah, it's a teleprompter's tough, right? I mean, a teleprompter's hard to use. And I'll say what's tougher than that is, like, those are just formalities, right, and practice and stuff. What's harder than that is the hardest speeches that there are to give are no crowds are terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. Like, cause you're literally up there and you're feeding off the energy of the crowd, right? Like my speeches all dictate based off the crowd's energy, right?
Right.
Like I hate speaking to bankers, mm-hmm, and lawyers, like law firms and stuff, because they're all just so like monotone.
Yeah.
Like you don't get any energy from them. You don't get any reaction emotions, you know, cause honestly, my speech literally, it's a bunch of slides, and all I try to do in that entire speech is nobody's going to remember what you say. Like, we can all say the same thing, blah, 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 but they're going to remember how you made them feel. How can I trigger something in their life or whatever they're going through or whatever they've gone through and use that piece of perspective and try to trigger that emotion and bring that out of them because people want to feel. And if I can hit a successful speech to me is if I can make people laugh, if I can make them think about their own life, if I can make them cry, and then I can bring them back at the end and make them feel like they want to kick their windshield out on the way home. And if I can do that, if I can do the roller coaster of emotions through the entire speech, I have won that speech. Doesn't matter what I say or how I get it there, mm-hmm, but I get it there. And if you don't get anything you can't read, it's like, now it turns me off of being able to amplify and be able to feed off of what's next. So then I just turn into reading.
Yeah. And I think that's when I got burnout on like stand up, me personally, like speaking in front of, you know, crowds was, cause it's essentially what it is, but you're just a comedian, right? You're telling jokes instead of trying to make people feel something. And you know, I would show up to some of these clubs and it was like 30 people. I couldn't get amped about it, like night after night. And I was like, all right, I clearly don't love this enough, like a Rogan or a Chappelle or fuck, even Dane Cook, man. Like, because I've seen all of them perform from back in the day, like 20 years ago, right? Because I started really young. I started doing stand-up at like 16. Those guys would still give it their all for 30 fucking people. And I was just like, man, to me, it was not enough. That I was just like, I should probably step away from this.
Like, I could give it my all to 30 people. It doesn't matter. Like, I give it my all to even one person, right? Like, I don't care how many people there are, but I at least want them to be engaged. Like, if I feel like they're there because of any other reason than they want to be there.
Mandatory fun.
Fuck
that bullshit.
Then it's like, then I'm like, well, like, I feel like I've been in their shoes. So I'm like, yep. I'm out, right? Let me help you get through this. I'm tired of wasting your time.
Yeah, and stand-up, it's, you know, you're trying to get laughs. So for 30 people, it does not, that amount of laughter doesn't fill up a room. So it just feels like I'm in front of my family at Thanksgiving, and I was just like, all right, great. For you, I understand it. Because it's like, dude, when people show up to see Dakota Meyer speak, chances are you're going to change someone's life. But for you, it's true. Like, I'll go back to your Joe Rogan episode, and even though, look, man, we've been friends in real life for 4 or 5 years now at this point, and I had not heard that Rogan episode. I had heard of it because everybody else was just like, yo, man, did you hear Dakota? Like, oh, it was the greatest show ever. And even Rogan talked about it a couple episodes later. It was like, that was the best episode I think I've ever done. And I went back and listened to it on the drive cross country from North Carolina to Texas, and, dude, I was fucking glued. I had to piss about a half hour in. But I couldn't stop. I was like, I got to hear the rest of this. And it was so amazing to hear your story and hear you speak that I was like, holy shit. I can't imagine if I was in a room and you were speaking to me and, you know, I had went through the same things or I was a veteran or trying to transition. Like, it would have changed my life probably.
Yeah. Well, you know, and when I show up to my speeches, when I give my speeches, you know, I do the same thing, and it doesn't matter whether I'm showing up on a call now or whether my speeches are, it doesn't matter anytime. Like, if anybody looks to me or ask a question, I still give them the same thing I give on a Rogan podcast or a Jocko podcast or anything. It's like, I try to give them all my perspective and what I can with it. Right. It's just I don't know. I used to look at it as an inconvenience, and like, now I just, any opportunity I get to touch or to like yesterday, like I spent 12 hours yesterday down at COTA, the Circus of the Americas, helping with the hurricane evacuees, right? Mm-hmm. And every person I got to talk to, I was just like, you know, they show up there in line. You don't know how many other lines they've already gone to. They're already, you know, just, like, first off, they just drove. You don't know how far they just came from. A lot of them come from Lake Charles. And they show up, and then, you know, we got there and you look at some of these other employees that are there, not with us, but just other people who were there. And it's like, yeah, hey, you're going to go over here and do this. And like, for me, I tried to talk to them. I tried to make their kids laugh. I tried to just show them, I tried to humanize a little bit more of what's going on and just show them that, hey, look, I got that. We're trying to help you with the system that's in place. But like, we're humans too, and we do care. Like, we're not just here to do this as a job. We do care about what you're going through. We do empathize with what you're going through. And it's just, anytime I get a chance to touch somebody like that, it's like, if I can just help their day just a little bit, cause how much does it mean to them to let them know that somebody else cares? Yeah. Right? Like you take, I mean, I don't know how many people just over and over yesterday, like they pull up in their car and literally they show you a picture of their house. And all they have left is what's in their car, and they don't know where they're going. They don't know what tomorrow looks like. And it's just perspective, man. It's like, these people, you know, had guys show up, you know, one of them was on dialysis. His wife had cancer. They've lost everything that they got, and they don't even know where they're going to stay tonight. And, you know, then they've got kids in there, and it's like, well, you know what? Like, you know, look, I wish we could do more for you, but man, look, you look what you got in this car. You could be worse, right? You could not have what you got in this car. And it's like, then they, you know, if you can get a smile from them, and then, you know, you hand the kid some candy, right? It's like just the little things of what we can do for each other. And it's like, we've got to find a way to do that for people. We've got to change our mindset as to, how many things are inconveniences to us anymore, right? Like, why does dealing with other people become inconveniences, right? Like, you never know. All of us are going through something. Everybody in this room is going through something. And it's just part of it. And it's like, we just got to find a way to connect these people. And look, I'll tell you, look, going down and fighting people and this rioting stuff, man, it's not the answer. And I'll tell you what, it's not the representation of the majority of the world, right? The news has just gotten out there, and they've tried to make us believe that we're this messed up, and we're not, right? And I think that I have summed this up to that what's happened is inside of our leadership in America, it's the older generation. The older generation that was the problem back 50 years ago, right? And what's happened is they found a way to get the media to believe them that it still is the problem. And it's not the problem that we see. It's not the problem of the majority of the younger generation. Like, it's not how we see things. We've never lived in that world of, you know, of separate water fountains and all that, right? Like, we've never lived in that. And we don't see it that way. We've grew up next to people, right? We've never seen segregation and things like that. We've never looked at other people in a racist way, because that's just how we've grown up out of that. And I think what's happened is our leadership is too old. Our leadership is out of touch of what our reality is every day. And they're trying to represent us again. They're trying to represent of how life is for us, but they don't have a fucking clue as to what life is for us.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And I think that's the common fucking mistake that politicians make, is they think, because they've been in there 50 years like a Joe Biden, that it's like, well, I know the government better than you. And it's like, you might know the government and the way things work, but you're not in touch with the people themselves and what it's like to be young and go through the problems and what, pressures
what about,
of today.
What about the squad, though? What about Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and AOC?
So I'm glad you brought that up.
They're all young, relatively speaking.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is my biggest fear, is that is actually what America's youth wants. And maybe we're starting to get out of touch with what America's youth wants. And I don't know the right answer.
Well, here's the right answer. I don't give a fuck what America's youth wants. How about that? Because they're stupid as shit. Because I remember being their age. I was a dumb motherfucker, right? When I was 21 years old, I didn't know shit. I was dumb as fuck, and I made stupid decisions all the time based on things I heard from people. Now we're in this media age where people get clickbait fucking news feeds, right? That's all it is. And they understand a very small part of situations, and they parrot fucking lines, and that becomes their reality over time. So if you genuinely believe that police are out there hunting black people on the street, if you're dumb enough to believe that, then a moral person would want to go out and do something about it. That makes sense. It's not a problem of these individuals' morality. It's a problem of them getting fed the wrong information, right? And not understanding how to process it correctly. So I don't know what the solution to that is, but they can get fucked. Like, if we have to wipe this generation out completely, get them out the fuck of way.
But here's what I'll tell you.
I'm not saying murder them. I'm just saying they don't have a voice in government until they figure out how the fuck government works.
But here's the problem of it, right? It's not the younger generation's problem. It's not their fault, and I wouldn't write them off yet, because here's what I'll tell you is the majority. Look, we just, right or wrong, you can, you know, don't get in the whole details of the last 20 some years of war. What I'll tell you is don't give up, because the people that we're talking about are the same people who carried the burden and volunteered to go fight those wars, right? So right or wrong, good or bad, like, I wouldn't give up on them. But what I would tell you is they are influential, and they are looking for it's easier access for them to get there. And what's happened is, if you notice, our politicians have started tapping in more to the feeds that go directly around the people, the adults of the world, and has tuned in, and they found how to pipe this misinformation, which is not true. What you've got is this older generation that has no clue what our needs are. Joe Biden, when's the last time Joe Biden has ever, and I'll even say this as Donald Trump, when's the last time has either one of them understand the needs that me, us three here, if we said, here's the five issues that we deal with that are the hardest on our life, when's the last time they ever understood that?
Well, Donald Trump has never understood it, because he was born rich. And Joe Biden was born middle class. So he, you know, maybe he did, but he's been in politics since he was 29.
But either way, like, when's the last time does he understand about raising kids? When's the last time does he understand about where we're dealing with, right? About where an everyday, the majority average of American, the issues that we're dealing with and struggling with right now. They don't have a fucking clue. When's the last time they've pumped their own gas? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, look, Trump's got a kid who's 14. Now, he's 9 feet tall. So if they can figure out what happened to Barron, that would be great. It appears that way. The last time I saw somebody that tall was Lurch on the Adams family.
Same thing that,
and he's 14, so he's only going to get taller.
Yeah, it's the same thing that Andre the Giant had, probably.
And when they cut away to him last night, I wanted to pay the cameraman to crop him out of that shot, because that is all that was in my mind during that great speech, was there is a 9-foot child that is going to smash through the streets and kill Antifa on his own, because that's the next step for him, is to become Godzilla and go through the street. Maybe that's Trump's thing for the second term, is they're building a fucking superhuman to go and stomp the streets of Antifa.
Well, I tell you what, I wouldn't mind that at all, literally or figuratively, because I've had enough of these assholes. Like, I don't give two fucks about the Republican Party or anybody in it. But when people are coming from a convention, people who are elected officials being escorted by police, like Rand Paul, for example, or the, what's the Vernon, what the hell is his last name? Can't remember his name.
Jones.
Yeah, Vernon Jones, yeah. When they're walking away from an event like that, and other people who are also involved in the RNC, and they're getting, like, people are up in their face, talking shit to them, stalking them through the streets. Try that shit with me and see what the fuck happens.
Yeah, and
now, I'm going to start going to RNC. I want to get invited to the RNC events in liberal cities now, because I fucking dare you to try that shit with me.
Well, and here's the thing. If you have not seen the footage for the audience, if you've not seen the footage of what Dan is talking about, last night after Trump's speech, when they got the 1,000 people out of there, they had to walk across, you know, the street. Normally, you know, you're not at a private event anymore.
But here's, and they got attacked. But here's where I go back.
And they pushed the cop that was escorting Rand Paul and his wife got pushed over by protesters.
And he got a bike thrown at him.
If I'm that cop, frankly, and my protectees right here, my gun's out. As soon as you start throwing shit at me, my gun's out, and I'm going to start fucking people up.
But here's the, here's the issue, right? Is the RNC, the DNC, all this has become a shit show, right? And caused by all of them. It's attracted this. And do you think those people would be doing that if they weren't getting the media attention? Do you think? No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't be there. They wouldn't be there. It's the media's fault. It's the media's fault for giving them attention.
Well, it's not just the media. It's the political organization.
No, but
as well.
But the media is getting there, because
the media is the media is helping for sure.
Yeah, because they're the ones that are saying, here's where you should show up.
But they
next.
Can't do it without the Republicans and the Democrats. People on the right and people on the left have found that people in America are generally 45% is going to vote this way, 45% is going to vote this way, no matter what happens. So you're only talking to 10% of the country. Fucking half of them don't even vote. So you're talking to a very small segment of the country, and they're usually fucking crazy. So they're going out on the limb doing crazy, wild bullshit. This is what you do in digital marketing. I know that people who like the military and like coffee are probably going to buy Black Rifle. I don't have to talk to them. I have to message for everybody else, these little niche pocket customer bases. And this is the same thing that is happening in political ads, and then those political ads turn into media. So don't let the Republicans or the Democrats off the hook for this bullshit.
But here's where I challenge you on this, right? Of being tired of this. What are you tired of, right? Like, how many times have people approached you, right? How many days has it affected you? You know what I mean? Like, I think what happens is we're all feeding, like, just right now, like, when we say, well, we're fucking tired of it, right? Like, because I got it now. I'm like, well, at what point do we stand up, right? Because that crosses my mind sometimes. We're not even fucking close, right? Like it's never, like, I'll tell you right now, I haven't seen one protest. I haven't seen, nobody's approached me. Nobody's came and fucked with me. Nobody has said at me at my table and told me to raise my hand, right? Like none of this. It's the media, literally, even fucking with us, making us believe that this problem is bigger than it is. I got that there's these cities up there. Look, those cities that are controlled or whatever's happening, protesting there, that's all political. Those politics and those police could shut that down at any point that they want to, and they know that, right? And they're just letting this happen because it's all political and the elections are coming up. Like, if it wasn't for that, they would shut this down. And we all know right now, we know right now that this stuff could be over in a day. In a day, it could literally be stopped, flip the switch, and all these protesters are done. But it's like, they want us to believe, well, it's been 120 days of protest. What does that even mean? I haven't even seen a fucking protest yet.
Well, that's because you live out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I was Dan and I have seen a few.
I know. There have been
Have they messed with you too?
In Minneapolis alone, it doesn't matter if it's about me personally. In Minneapolis alone, 1,500 privately owned businesses, not Target and Walmart, privately owned small businesses have been destroyed by this bullshit.
I got you.
That's something that I'm willing to go fuck people up for. Like that, you can't. I understand that there's no equivalence between a human life and a building, but
let me ask you.
My livelihood. But my ability to live my life gets affected by somebody with a fucking Molotov
cocktail. I want to throw this back to you. I'm in. If those business owners go out there and they stand outside those businesses, and they go out there and they're fighting for it, I'll go help them.
But they're not going to, because if they do, it's a white person with a gun protecting a building from people who are trying to get justice. That's the
I got you.
This is terrorism, by the way.
100%. 100%.
So,
and guess what?
This I've been lighting up not only the mayors of these cities, which are mostly Democrats.
Yes.
They're actually all Democrats. And the governors of these states, which are, I think, all but one are Democrats. And then Donald Trump as well. Like, this is domestic terrorism. What the fuck are you doing?
Who
gives a shit about the election?
But
your job is not to get elected. You're a fucking president right now. Your job is to serve this motherfucking country, and you're not doing it, bitch.
Nope, you're not. Right. So, but there's my point, right? Look, we've already gone over and fought other people's problems before.
Yeah.
How'd that work out for us?
Well, this is different. Right? This is our country.
But you're right. It is. It is. But it's also, at what point are we going to stop? Are we going to stop pulling the weight? I don't care if they're doing it as good as us. Obviously, we could probably do a little bit better because we're trained. If they want to go stand up and fight for their own and defend their own places, I'm willing to go help. But I tell you what, I'm not willing to do. Even if they're a white person with a gun defending their own business, I'm not willing to go be the white person with the gun defending their somebody else's business who's going to sit back and at the end of the day be like, well, he came from another city. He came here and then he hurt somebody. And I just want to save my reputation because I don't, you know what I mean? If they're not going to put principle before political or whatever other outside source of it is, then I'm not willing to go do it for them too. Right? You know what I mean? I'm all in. Look, if at some point these businesses start standing up and they need help standing up for their business, let's go, man. Let's go. Let's go and let's stand up. But I'm not willing to do it for them.
Well, I don't think
in
it's time for individual citizens to mobilize and start fucking going into these cities. What I think it's time for is the president to reach between his legs and grab his fucking nuts, because we elected you because you're in Washington outsider. You're not supposed to be playing these political games. 4 more years in that office clearly means more to him than keeping fucking private businesses from getting burned to the ground. Otherwise, he'd be fucking doing something about
it. So I'm glad you brought this up, because he brought it up during the speech last night. Now, what he was saying in regards to cities being burned down and protests and riots and all that stuff, he's saying that he has offered to send in military presence. But
that's not the answer.
Well, so here's the thing. He said he was denied by either the governors or the mayors. I don't know the laws well enough.
You don't need the military. This is not a this is not a military operation. You don't want to send the fucking military.
Then how do you stop it is the question.
You HRT, fucking you send in uniformed DC police, uniformed Secret Service police. You send in the fucking HRT from FBI to be special operations. There's plenty of organizations that have plenty of fucking troops that can go there and fucking handle this, that are trained in domestic law enforcement.
I mean, look, you even have National Guard, right? So, like, National Guard is made for this.
So that's what he was saying. But what he was saying last night was he does not have jurisdiction if he gets turned down by a governor or mayor, and I don't know the laws for the National Guard.
The National Guard has to be a state of emergency has to be declared in the state, and they have to give the president.
But he has jurisdiction over the FBI, Secret Service, any
Homeland Security, everything.
And there's
200,000 fucking people he could activate right now.
But here's like,
and the other part of it is fucking Attorney General Barr standing up on stage in front of people and saying, by these legal precedents, between the Attorney General's office and the White House Legal Counsel, we've decided that these things are now terrorism.
Yes.
And you're going to be fucking prosecuted.
Yeah, Antifa has got to be, like, it's all about labelism, like labeling it, right? Antifa's got it, but here's, it turns into a whole other funding problem if you start labeling terrorism and then somebody gets killed. I mean, it's just a shit show, right? But
why is that? Because I know he labeled Antifa as a terrorist organization.
Well, he said it out loud. That is not the same
thing. It doesn't mean it's impossible.
And I'm asking because I don't know. What's the next step in that, Dan?
Next step is there's transnational terrorism laws on the books in the United States, but there's no domestic terrorism laws. There are no laws that outline how we would deal with the Klan, for example. Like if they were to fucking go start targeting black people in America again, that there's no law to it would be a hate crime, but it wouldn't be terrorism, and it should be. Because that's terrorism. They don't want black people as part of society. That is a political end, and they're using violence to achieve it. That is fucking terrorism. Doesn't matter where it happens or where the fucking person who's committing the act originates. That is just terrorism. And these motherfuckers need to be thrown in the bottom of a jail cell. Look, here's the problem with the phrase terrorism. You lose your right to counsel. That's just how it is. So applying that in these kind of ways, they're going to have to figure out some creative ways. I don't think that would be able to be the case.
And I had a cop tell me this, and a close buddy of mine, because I was kind of like you. I was like, man, like, aren't these people breaking the law? Like, can't you guys still hold them accountable? And here's what he said back to me, where I don't. Some of these businesses I do give a shit about, like, right? Some of them I do, especially the small businesses. But these big businesses that are getting destroyed. He said something to me that really, really hit home and changed my perspective on it. He goes...
On big business?
On some of the bigger
like,
retail stores.
Target,
something, whatever, okay. Right? Any of them bigger stores. Right? I don't know. I don't know what stores. I'd have to look...
Well, the reason I chose Target is obviously for the George Floyd incident.
Okay, So any of the bigger stores, like the Macy's or whatever, right? He goes, why am I going to go down there? And he was talking about in Austin. He goes, why am I going to go down there as they're fucking up these stores of these businesses who were just against me and didn't want me there anyways? Why would I go down there and protect these streets where people didn't even want me anyways?
Yeah, if a Starbucks is on fire, honestly, and I'm walking by, I'm probably going to keep walking. Right. Unless there's people, and they'll help the people, but that building can burn to the fucking ground.
Yeah, he goes, why? We're sitting back, literally, we're sitting back watching. And he was telling me stories after stories of, he's like, we're sitting here. They're saying, fuck the police. We don't need you. We're standing back just watching.
Then he falls and skins his knee and starts calling for a medic.
And then a guy gets hit by a beanbag somewhere or another guy. And then they're all running this guy to him and going, help us, help us, help us. And he's like, I thought y'all didn't need us.
Yeah.
you know what I mean? And it's like, it's just a.
My favorite one so far, by the way, was that those cops were searching that female Antifa lady, and someone's like, can you get a female officer over here to do this? And the cop turned around and goes, oh, I identify as female.
It was good.
It was very, very good.
That's a good one.
I mean, that's just a good joke under any circumstance. Even if they were just wrestling around and somebody made that joke, that's a very funny joke. I need to know that.
But I just think that look, I don't think our country's got as big of problems as everybody's making us believe.
Well, not now, but there's mission creep, right? Like once psychology is more viral than any virus, and when these young dum-dums think it's oppression, FOMO, fear of missing out on oppression, they've never actually faced any real oppression in their life, so they're co-opting the oppression of other people and trying to process it emotionally. It's like a weak attempt, I guess, at empathy because you're not really going through anything. Like empathy is you and I have been in combat. So I know what it's like. You and I can have a real conversation about that you and him can never have. And that's empathy. They're trying to turn sympathy into empathy, but you've never experienced that stuff. So you act irrationally to it. You know what I mean? You try to, and it's virtue signaling as well. Like, how upset do I need to appear right now to make sure everybody knows I'm not racist? That's a question people, I promise you, ask themselves on a regular basis, and that's fucked. That you would even have to ask yourself that. It's fucked up.
Yeah. I agree.
Because it's not about the point anymore. You're not analyzing the facts. You're just saying, all right, what's the appropriate emotional response?
Well, it's all emotional.
Now let me fucking meet that and I'm all set. Thoughts and prayers.
But here's the issue with that, right? Is our leaders, look, everything that's happening in America is a direct reflection of leadership of America. It's 100% a direct reflection of leadership. What does it sound like every time they go in front of Congress and they start bitching at each other, Nancy Pelosi or any of them up there, right? Like, I'm not just talking about on the Democratic side, Republican side, all of them, right? Trump, Biden, all of them, any of it. What do they all sound like? A bunch of emotional high school fucking kids talking to each other. There's no adults up there. You know what I mean? And so, like, when
that's
you
why
start,
people hate Jordan Peterson so much, by the way, because he just flat out says it. And they're like, well, what are you saying? That you're fucking, you're misogynist? He's like, no, that's not what I said. What I said were these three things.
Exactly.
Then you, based on your bullshit, assumed what I was talking about.
No, let's go. Yeah. No. And it's like, go back to these three things.
Yeah.
Like, go back to these three things. Right. And it's like, let's go back to the facts. Well, but no, let's stick to the facts. Do you even know that? Like, answer these facts and I'll answer your questions. And it's like, But you don't have any adults leading, like you don't have anybody coming in and leading this. They're too busy. When you start fighting in the adults out in public in the media, well, what do you think everybody else is gonna fucking do?
Yeah, everybody's got to take sides then. Oh, did you see this last night? I feel this way about it. Oh yeah, cool. Thanks for telling me.
And no matter what topic it is, you can pick a side. And you can decide to put whatever slant you want on it,
like
no
this,
matter what it is in
this
the
world. Kid in Kenosha is a good example of this, because nobody, none of the four people involved in that, the three people he shot, plus him, probably plus his mom, are right. Everybody's wrong. Like, the guy that had the Glock was a felon.
Yep.
Shouldn't have had a gun in the first place. The other guy's a peaceful man, according to his girlfriend, swinging a fucking skateboard at a kid's head repeatedly, like a child. Clearly, this guy's a fucking dumpy little child. The other guy was a pedophile, right? And then homeboy's mom drove him with rifles and dropped him off in a fucking riot.
So I wanted, what the fuck? No one is in the right in that situation.
All these like conservative Instagram pages right now are like, this guy's a fucking patriot and a hero. No, he's not. He's a fucking child and an idiot, and his mom should be in fucking jail.
So here's my thing, right? That's funny you brought that up. Like, I was thinking about this on the way over here. I don't know why. Like, he rolled over here with me. I don't ever turn my radio on. Like, I don't know. It's like my only time I can get my thoughts, right? And on the way over here, I was like, okay, how do you charge this guy, right? So I don't think you charge him with the guy who has a gun, there's no murder there. The guy who hits him with a skateboard, if he's fearing for his life, definitely no murder there. If he shot somebody else fearing for his life, there's no murder, but I do think you get him with wanton endangerment. You do charge him with all these other charges because he got there.
Because he's underage.
You know, there is a lot of factors, like at what point does he have a responsibility for even being there under, you know, carrying a weapon under adult, you know, under 18. Like, there's a lot of responsibility.
Well, I don't know about in Texas or in Wisconsin, but a lot of these states, Texas is one of them, has very clear aggressor laws. For example, I pull my gun out and point it at you. And you say, what the fuck? I put my gun away. Then you pull your gun out and shoot me. You're the aggressor now. You committed murder, technically speaking. That's how it works.
No, it's shit.
Like, I have to, if I start to retreat and put my weapon away, then you pull your weapon out.
Yes, if you start to retreat, because you can't, if you turn around and ran out my, so like if you broke in my house.
Yep.
Well, in Texas, you can murder people in your house. Because it's castle.
Yeah, castle dog.
But like, hey, like, look, let's say we're out on the street.
Yeah.
And this goes to the point of why I think we fuck people over by the concealed carry classes, because we don't give them enough of this understanding. In an 8-hour class is kind of fucked. It's not enough to train these.
Like fucking George Zimmerman, you mean? That fucking turd.
But like, if I pulled my gun out on you, let's say we're driving down the road and you started walking towards me, and I pulled my gun out on you and pointed at you.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you go for your gun, and I think I'm going to scare you to hold you back, right? And you pulled your gun and shot me. It's self-defense.
Yeah. You're the aggressor because you pulled your weapon
first. I'm the aggressor
because I may have been menacing, you're the aggressor because you pulled your weapon
Absolutely,
out
right?
So there are clearly defined laws in that. They'll unpack this whole situation and figure it out. But look, things happen real fast.
I mean, I think the kid, no matter what, the kid's life's ruined. No matter what,
there's new stuff that's come out today. Like, people thought he shot that first guy in the head, right? And apparently the guy was throwing shit at him.
I mean, I got you, but like,
but if you're throwing hard, if you're throwing blunt objects at my head and I've got a gun, you're going to die. Sorry. Like, I'm not going to take the chance of getting knocked the fuck out, and especially if something's on fire and you're throwing at me.
So does he get off on that charge?
I don't know, because we won't know.
What was he doing? So here's the question.
What was he doing before that?
There's going to be these factors of what he was doing up to it. Like, I'm not saying, I don't know either way. I don't know enough details. I don't know enough facts. I don't think anybody does right now. I do think, like, look, if a guy's swinging a skateboard at your head, like, you're going to get fucking shot.
Yeah,
right?
If you walk up like, with me, you walk up to me with a Glock like this, you're going to lose a bicep.
Yeah, but here's going to be right. The question, though. But here's going to be the question is did he pull the gun before the guy hit him with the skateboard? Right?
Because we know that because we saw that happen.
Yeah.
He's running down the street away from these guys, and homeboy runs behind him and hits him.
So then
he's like pummeling over the head with the skateboard.
Then that guy deserved to get what he got. But here's what I think you can't do. You cannot bring up the facts of what those people are outside of this.
After the fact, you kind of can.
The one guy
was a felon with a gun.
The other guy was
a pedophile.
I got you. And look, they obviously, in our opinions, they deserve. You're a pedophile. You should have been killed a long time ago, right? Yeah. But what I will tell you is you can't take the fact that he's a pedophile. If he didn't have a gun and he didn't hit the guy, it's not that kid's not the law.
Yeah. And when they look at it in a criminal court, they're not going to say, oh, hey, he was a pedophile. He was already prosecuted.
And they shouldn't.
That.
He was already prosecuted for that. Look, the law's already gave him
I don't care about that. I think we should drag prosecuted or otherwise pedophiles out into the
street.
I totally agree, but legally. I'm telling you, you get my point, right?
I feel like if we did that in Texas, we would probably get away with it.
No, you wouldn't.
Not in Austin.
No.
Maybe not in Austin, but if we... If we were to just line up,
and at the end of the day,
set them on
last I heard, there ain't no laws when you're drinking White Claw.
Yeah, there is. They're not a sponsor, but they should be. Real quick, we got some sponsors who pay for this whole shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost, GhostBed.com/drinking bros, finest mattresses in the land. Labor Day is coming up soon, kids. They've got a Labor Day special, 30% off of all bundle packages. So you can bundle everything together. Mattresses, sheets, pillows, adjustable bases, you name it, you can bundle it together. You get 30% off. And as always, they get a 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest there. So even with that 30%, boom, you can put it on the 36-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest on that. You're good to go. You're probably looking at, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of $35 to $40 a month to sleep in absolute comfort every single night. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today. Next up, we got GetRoman.com /drinking bros. Yeah, dude. Get your boner on. I know they're on your show, Front Toward Enemy. We're gigantic fans of Roman, pun intended. And so is our producer, Giorgio, who has an OnlyFans account. What is it? Is it Just Giorgio? Just Giorgio. He's going to show the before and after effects on Roman. I have not seen it yet.
Yes. It's impressive. I mean, it just puts more blood in your dick, dude.
Well.
And it works every single time.
We'll find out. Go to Just Giorgio on OnlyFans for that. So he's going to try out the Roman. I know, look, they've been a sponsor forever, obviously because everybody loves them. There's a reason why they've taken over Viagra. You just go online, go to GetRoman.com/drinking bros, fill out a little questionnaire, and boom, within 48 hours, you're getting boner pills in your mailbox. Whether you're using them recreationally or you actually need them, you don't have to go into a doctor and say, my dick doesn't work, or I'm flaccid, or my wife isn't having a good time anymore.
Like, how embarrassing is that, right? Like, every time you go in, and what always happens is you go into your doctor's office to talk to him about, like, hey, it's not working, right? And he always sends in the hottest nurse in there, right? Like, it's the one time, and then she comes
in.
You
think that's part of the test to see if you get hard then?
I do.
Yeah.
I think it's like, so what do you say? So what are you here for? You know, the doctor will be in a minute. Yeah, like, I need to talk to him about, like, I've got ED. You know what I mean? And she's always the one that's single. You know, it's like, it's always that situation.
So should I feel bad that they keep sending dudes in for me? Is this guy judging me? I mean, what's happening here?
You should feel better, but...
Really look into why they're doing prostate exams when you talk about an ED.
Yeah. I think you should. I think you really should. Go to GetRoman.com/drinking bros today. Free shipping on that, and it's in like 48 hours. And we made our producer, Giorgio, get an OnlyFans account, Just Giorgio, on OnlyFans, so you can see the before and after of Roman for $5. You can see...
We didn't make him. He did it because
he wanted to. He kind of didn't want to.
It's worth your $5.
It is worth your $5. I'll say this. Since you're on the show, we were drinking these all at your house. Do you have a promo code? Because this is you and Jocko's energy drink.
Yeah, it's DAXSavage10. If you go to... So what it is, it's Discipline Go. It's drink. It's all natural. It's the only all natural energy drink that's out there. It's keto. We joined up with Jocko and them after I got rhabdo from drinking too many bangs.
Bang's the worst.
Bang's the fucking worst. And their CEO always terrible too. But so you can go to Origin USA. It's there. It's the Jocko. It's the Jocko Fuel. It's Dak Savage 10. Make sure you get the Dak Savage flavor.
Savage, by the way.
Yeah, make sure you get the Dak Savage flavor. It's by far.
I thought it was
my favorite.
Dak Prescott.
I know, but it's not. It's Dak Savage.
But if it was about Dak Prescott, he would be throwing passes wide.
Those cans would be going right over your head, about five miles over your head. Yeah.
Yeah, and Dan even likes them. Dan endorses them. Dan loves them.
I love them, man. I had them at your house.
They're good, yeah.
They're all stock full. Put one on the set.
Which one's the Arnold Palmer flavor?
That's the Jocko Palmer.
Jocko Palmer.
Is it really?
Yeah, and actually Jocko Sweat is in each one of these. And so I'm telling you up front, like you don't even have to, like you talk about, there's more testosterone in Jocko Sweat from how badass he is than there is in anything. So actually every drink you drink, it has a little
bit
of
Jocko. What's the website?
It's you can get them on Amazon. You can get them on Origin.
But how do you use the promo code?
On Origin USA.
OriginUSA.com?
Yeah, .com. Let me see. Let me check it out. Let me check
Dak Savage 10. We'll get you 10% off of that. It'll also, you don't have to set an alarm on your phone anymore to wake up because it'll wake you up at 4 a.m. just like Jocko does, right?
Yeah.
Is he still in that for the 4 a.m.?
Absolutely. It's actually OriginMaine.com.
Maine,
because they're out of Maine. And everything's made in America.
The state of Maine.
Yeah, right. State of Maine. And yes, it will make you wake up at 4 a.m. and get a workout in, and it will make you more disciplined.
You got to just go to Jocko.com. You got to let Dan help you with that. You know, Origin Maine. We got to get to Jocko.com. Dak Savage 10, though, we'll get you 10% off of that. I wanted to chat with you about your new career, so to speak, because you are on the other side of it now. You are now a first responder. So all of the people that you've spotlighted for years and years and years, you decided to become one of them, and you're a firefighter now. How is it being on that side of it for you, and what's it like being a veteran going into firefighting? Because we have a ton of firefighters to listen to the show.
You know, first off, my respect level for what they do has been astronomical. You know, I felt like I got out, you know, I was out of the military in 2010. And I just, obviously I didn't get out on my own terms. I mean, I did get out on my own terms, but I didn't get out when I wanted to. I mean, I wanted a career of it. Like I lived it, loved it, blah, blah, blah. Go down the whole story. I mean, it's like the Uncle Rico syndrome. And then I went out and started speaking about it. And I've been giving these talks and speaking and going around to all these groups. And I started feeling like an imposter syndrome, right? Like at what point am I still recertifying what I'm speaking about? At what point am I just telling people how to live it, but I'm not living it, right? I kind of felt like I wasn't worthy to continue giving people advice on something that I hadn't done in 10 years, right? And I honestly, like, I felt like I'd spent the last 10 years just focused on myself and my family and me, that it was time for me to start focusing on other people. And, you know, so I went to the fire academy. I started volunteering. I went to the fire academy, went and knocked my EMT out, got EMT, my EMT done. I'm going to go ahead and knock out my paramedic and starting in January. And then, you know, I was like, I want to get experience, like the pandemics. I started running more calls, and I just said, hey, you know, I wanted to go to the station. I said, hey, I want to come full time. I want to be part of the team and I want to see what this is about and try to get experience on it. And I love it. I love it. You know, it's a lot of people keep asking me, like a lot of my friends are like, why are you doing this? Right. Like every one of them, that's the first thing they say, like, why are you doing this? And they don't understand. Like, you know,
here's the thing, as your friend, it was not a surprise to me or Dan, because again, you really live that life. Like you're the same as you are in a podcast, the same dude you are in real life. And I think that's the greatest trait about you, and it was not surprising to us. Why was it surprising to everybody else that you wanted to help and give back? Because that's what you've been doing for years and years and years.
You know, because they were like, well, why are you taking time off your businesses to do this? Why are you, you know, like what, you know, you're doing all this, like why are you jumping on a truck? It's not for the money, blah blah blah. And it's right, it's not, you know, I can go give speeches, right? And it's not for the money. And honestly, between us right here, like I've paid out of pocket for all my schooling, and I haven't taken $1 yet for doing anything. just because like I don't want it yet. And you know, for me, I just, man, I'll tell you, it hit me the other day. I ran a call and like I could see in the guy's eyes, like he had no clue who I was. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, do they respect me for what I've done before? Is it, you know what I mean? Is it that or what, blah, blah, blah. Like the dude genuinely appreciated me for what I was doing for him at that time. And, it's such a fulfilling job, and it doesn't matter what call I go on, whether it's the, you know, it's a dumb call, whether it's a person that, you know, whether it's something that I don't feel like is crazy or not, I just to be able to go and these people rely on us. I mean, think about this. Like I tell these guys I work with and I remind them all the time because they get caught up and they do this every day and they forget how amazing they are. Like they forget how much they matter. Like they do this every day. And I honestly stepped back from a call the other day. I watched how the whole, let me tell you up front, I am by no means as good as the guys I'm surrounded by. When I go on shift and I'm around these guys, like I look up to every single one of them. I look up to them. Like to me, in my eyes, they are amazing. Like I'm telling you, I look up to them like you could never imagine.
What was it like for them? Did they know who you were like on the first day when you step in? Where it's like, holy shit, what the fuck is Dakota Meyer doing?
I think a couple of them did. You know, I didn't walk in there and say anything, right? I walked in and I call everyone sir. I get up and I try to do more than them as far as like cleaning and sweeping because I'm the new guy and I have to earn my spot, right? I get out there and I bust my ass as hard as I can, just to do my part because I am the new guy. So I'm at the bottom, right? I'm a rookie. But these guys, like I look up to them. Like when I tell you, in every one of them, I look up to them. You know, it's just indescribable, right? Because they're so good. I get out, you know, you take Marble Falls area EMS that I go on calls with them. I'll never forget watching them on a CPR call one time, man. And I remember sitting back and I looked at how awesome all of them were. And I was like, I want to be like them. I want to fucking be like them. And then like I get around them and I see their culture and I want to be like them. And then like I go down and I'm working at this other department and I look at all those guys. I'm telling you, every single one of them there, I want to be like them. It's so awesome to have that. And, man, they're such, they forget. Like, so I called them the other day. I called them after a shift. Like, I looked at them and I just told them, I said, you saved this person's life. Like, you really saved this person's life. Like,
you never remember the ones you saved, though. You only remember the ones you lose.
No.
Like, I've heard that from EMTs and doctors.
No,
surgeons.
You only
remember the failures. If you're a person.
Yeah,
like
it's something like, in the military, some of the stuff these guys do on a daily basis, there would be fucking awards like crazy. Like these guys are they're the best, and they wake up every day and they hold themselves to that accountability. And for me, like I feel like that it's building, it's recertifying that I am still in the game. It's recertifying that when I go out on a stage and I talk to 5,000 people about service, and I talk to them about living a life worthy of living, and I talk to them about going out and still doing more, that I'm not just collecting a paycheck, that I am certified to talk about that because I'm still getting on a truck and I'm still doing it.
Now, how do you convince younger kids? Because clearly a lot of these kids feel like they're missing purpose in their life.
Yeah.
Right? Well, how do you, like somebody who is super into social justice, for example, how do you convince, and I don't mean that in a flippant way. I mean, somebody who's super into that.
Like a Kyle Rittenhouse.
No. Nope. Not that guy. Well, I mean, that guy's just a knucklehead. But like somebody who is super, there are plenty of people who are just super into social justice and don't know what to do, right? And then you add youth and hormones and ignorance to that, shit's going to go wrong more frequently than it's going to go right, in my opinion. Because I remember being that age and you're stupid. So how do you turn, because the military is great for this. It turns that sense of purpose that drives every young person into something that's that you can build from. Structure and organization, respect, and things like that, right? So how do you teach people who are extra military, like outside of the military, that kind of lesson when, look, we're dealing with a very entitled group of people as well, right? So I don't know how to reach these.
Let me tell you how you do it. Every call that I show up on, I treat them like they're the most important person to me at that time. And the more they see that, the more they can correlate the way you made them feel with that uniform, the more that they can correlate those two, that if everybody was doing that, it's kind of like Admiral McRaven said in his speech, right? That you know, the make your bed speech. He talked about if you could influence, I think it was 7 or 10 people, and then those 7 or 10 people influence that, right? If we can stay consistent with how we treat people and we don't fall into the, I'm going to go grab guns and I'm going to tell you to fuck off. If we can turn around and find a way to change the perspective of how they see us, and the only way you do that is by every time one of us get around them, it changes the way they look at it. If we start doing that, then they talk to their friend. Well, maybe it's not that way, right? And if they see that 2 or 3 times, it's kind of like marketing, right? It's no different than marketing. We are individually marketing every time we walk out that door, every time we come in touch with another person. We are individually marketing for a veteran, for a white male, for a father, for every piece of it, right? A podcast or whatever it is. We are marketing every time we walk in and we let somebody know and we identify with our side of it, even as a Republican, Democrat, whatever, we are identifying as that. And as soon as we start going back to individually marketing, then we start fixing the problem. But you can't fix the problem until we go back to that piece of it. You're not going to fix it by videos and by all this other shit. It's going to be every single day when you physically stand in front of somebody, you physically pull over on the side of the road, when people see how you treat your wife, when people see how you treat somebody else, when they see how you talk, when they see how you represent yourself and hold yourself, that's when people will start changing.
And I think
that's hard to do.
It is
hard to do.
And I think even more so for people in uniform. So the more that people can look up to firefighters, look up to policemen, then you start getting rid of these negative stereotypes that are, people are fucking smashing shit in the street saying, you know, all police are bad or all, you know, but, all that stuff.
But that starts with the standard being raised for us in uniform, right? Like, I hold myself to an individual standard, and I try to hold myself to the standard that the guys I'm surrounded by hold themselves to. But I'm going to tell you right now, like, I'll still show up on calls and I just want to be like, why the fuck are you in this business? Like, not from us, not from any organization, right, I'm working with, but mutual organizations. Mm. And I'm like, why the fuck are you here? If this is an inconvenience to you, if waking up in the middle of the night, even though you've ran on this person 3 fucking times, if that's such an inconvenience to you, then go get another job. If you're a nurse in a hospital, if you're a cop and I ask you to block traffic or I ask you to do this and it's an inconvenience to you while you're on shift getting fucking paid, then leave the job. Then leave the job.
Well, look, we're not going to make any more quality people, it seems.
Well,
like, we have the amount of quality people that we have.
Well, you will.
Wait. Let me get through this, because we have the amount of quality people that we have, and clearly they're choosing to do things other than become police officers. Not at large. There's plenty of great police officers. I'm just saying our recruitment pool is smaller than it should be, and it's because of a number of factors. Like, do we have to worry about money, or do we have to worry about security? You can't do both. Like, how much does it cost to field a police department that doesn't let shit like this happen? That's what I want to know.
I don't think you buy this.
Well, you can't buy it, but you can incentivize good people to come into the profession. People aren't going to do it if it's shitty pay and people don't like them.
But let me ask you,
nobody wants to be a cop right now.
Why did you get, like, how many times did you look around the military and you're like, I went to snipers because of this. Like, I got out of the line platoon and went to snipers because of this. Because I got tired of seeing guys around me able to get by.
Oh, yeah,
and they were pieces of shit.
Of shambers, yeah.
Right? And it's the same thing in the uniform services outside of it. Mm. Look, cops know that they don't get enough training. Cops know that they have people who aren't up to the standard, right? Like, whenever they're allowed to hold each other accountable to a standard that dictates that they're going to be the best, then that's when you'll start fixing it. It ain't about the money piece of it. How many guys leave because they're tired of the bullshit of, you know, this piece of shit who stayed here and then moved up in the ranks and now they're in charge of people. You know what I mean? And it's the standard. The standards, it's like the standards for dads. The standards have been set so fucking low that what is the reason for even holding the title? Like, obviously, look, obviously I love being a dad, right? But like when I look over and this other guy gets to call himself a dad because he's a weekend dad and you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's like, I hear the excuse of, well, you know, I didn't fight for my kids because, you know, well, she got it and did this and this. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me? Right? Like I don't,
so
I can't.
So it doesn't change the fact that you're a father.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It doesn't change the fact. And so, like, for me, I just think the standard has to be raised to be able to hold that title. And once that's done, you'll start fixing that problem, right? I think the world, like, I think the United States of America has plenty of amazing fucking people in it. They have plenty of great people. We are still, even at our worst, we're still the greatest country that ever fucking existed. And I think we forget that. When's the last time you've heard that?
Man,
right?
Beyond last night, like, yeah. Ever. Like, I'm for real. Yeah. You hear it in a speech because it's written, and yeah. You should say that.
You should.
But how many times? When's the last time, besides a president or somebody running for political office, that you've heard it in real life in a dinner conversation?
And you knew they believed it.
Yes. I never.
You know why?
I think you. You're the last person that said that.
And you know why? You know why? Because the media has made us fucking believe that. The media and everybody else has made us believe that. I'm telling you right now, like, we beat the media. Like, you fix it. Like, this next generation, here's what I hope with. Here's the cool part about this COVID piece of it and what I pray and I hope the blessing in disguise is of this, is that all these people have their kids at home now and that they're able to see more of how their kids are acting outside in public.
Yeah, like maybe they'll grab those phones and iPads out of
yes.
their hands
yeah.
and make them go outside and do shit.
Yeah. And maybe they'll sit here and they'll say, no, you're fucking wrong. This is not how we act. This is not how we believe. I'm going to put the core values back into you because you're here and I want you to be manageable and I want you to be a good human being and I want you to be able to contribute to society. And now that I have more time with you and somebody else isn't raising you with their own beliefs, that I'm going to get our kids back and our kids are going to go back to school and they're going to be fucking hard chargers. That's what I hope.
It'd be nice because this generation right now that's like 16 to 28 or whatever the fuck, they're fucked. Like they honestly think that they are owed everything.
Yeah.
And it's incredible to me. Like I can't imagine thinking that way about something. It doesn't make any sense to me to even think that way. I don't even like letting people buy shit for me.
Me neither.
It makes me feel awkward when I allow that.
It does.
But everybody's got
guilty.
Like it's guilty. People yeah. have their
people, venom. And that's the problem. People don't feel guilt anymore.
No,
we've allowed this way to act.
Like, stop fat shaming. No, fat shaming might save that fat fuck's life. They're not gonna die from me calling them fat. They are gonna die from fucking heart disease, motherfucker.
Yes.
Like, what's more important, their feelings or their fucking life?
Yeah.
Like, should I take time out to explain to the kid, well, electricity's danger, before I pull the fork out of his hand before he stuffs it in a light socket? No, motherfucker.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ, we're the weakest.
But when do you see fat kids with their parents aren't fat?
Rarely.
Do you know what I mean? I can usually look at a kid and say, watch this. I bet I can pick your fucking parents out. You know what I mean? Like it's a,
that
it's
would
a
be a good state fair game. Pick out the parents of the kid.
Absolutely. And I think that if the government's going to regulate us on these masks, like, which is whatever. I don't even want to get in that discussion. But if they're going to regulate us on the safety precautions of our mask, then they need to also regulate people on how much weight they gain and how unhealthy they are, right? There needs to be a standard on heart disease and shit like this, right? If you're going to regulate me.
There was before Obamacare.
Well,
it was you couldn't get insurance.
Well.
Frankly.
Yeah.
Not that that's.
I don't know.
I don't think we should tell people you can be as healthy as you can afford to be. I think that's.
Well, I agree, but I don't think. I do think
but
that there should be a standard.
There's got to be some personal responsibility. Like if
absolutely.
You spend if you have some kind of congenital disease, then we're going to take care of you. If you ate butter and sugar your whole life and now you're a fat piece of shit, sorry, bro, you're out.
Absolutely.
That's just the way it is.
Absolutely.
We need to stop. We need to really make an effort as a society to stop subverting natural selection. Get out of the way. The fucking, just like computers are smarter at doing data than we are, the world itself and nature itself and physics are way smarter at picking out who should survive and who should not. frankly. I think it's very human. It's very American even to the just the audacity to fucking get to move fucking science out of the way to make my own will. It's very bizarre to me. Like how we ever came to that. I know it's some kind of
it's a political piece.
It began as sympathy, but I believe it is political. I believe someone discovered very early on, maybe the Romans, maybe the Chinese before them, that the plebs or whatever you want to call them are uninformed enough that if we help them stay alive, they'll keep voting for us or whatever it is, or they'll keep us. Their labor will keep us in power.
I do think it's political. I do think it's political for people to be, I do think that the Democrats. I think they try to hold people back.
By people, you mean the entire black community with welfare, right?
Yeah.
Great. Thanks.
Done, right? Yeah. I mean, so I'm telling you.
It worked for 50 years.
Yeah.
This whole shit with LeBron is like the NBA is going to restart now, but only if every fucking NBA arena allows voting at their place. Who do you think they're telling them to vote for? Just out of curiosity.
That's breaking news there, by the way.
Just out of curiosity, who do you think they're telling them to vote for? And do you think voting in the woman, Kamala Harris, who put thousands of black men in jail, 1,500 life sentences for like weed or some shit, and Joe Biden, who wrote the crime bill. You think that's going to make some change? A guy that's been in government for 47 years couldn't change shit except for to say that he doesn't want his school to turn into a racial jungle and that he fucking wrote the crime bill. You think that motherfucker's going to come in and then, oh, voting work. Voting doesn't do shit. Voting is fucking pointless.
By the way, I'd love to see a show once a week, a podcast of the two of you guys. I think it would be outstanding.
Let's do it.
For real. This is the point in the show. We get to the drinking bro of the week. This one was submitted by Chris Arena from Illinois. Says he's been a DB for day one, dude. He's a day one homie, he says. And he's nominating Jim Arena. He says on 8/22/20, about a week ago, my father, Jim, lost his fight to lung cancer, mesothelioma, and he was the best dad and friend a guy could ask for. He taught me how to be honorable, stand up, hardworking, and a dependable man. He was one of the first people to offer his help, and he wouldn't leave the job until it was done, and he always gave you 100% and then some, no matter what. He was diagnosed November of 2019, and fought like hell every single day to beat this horrible cancer. But on August 20th, 2020, he was put on home hospice after the cancer had spread and passed a few weeks later in the arms of his loving wife and surrounded by his family. He leaves a son, himself, and a daughter to pass on his legacy. So raise a glass of Jack and ginger ale and toast a great man taken away too early. Cheers, motherfuckers. I think I misread that. So he was diagnosed at the beginning of August. So cheers. Cheers to you, man. And at home, you could submit your Drinking Bro of the Week to drinkingbros.com. We've got some teas available that are affordable, $19.99, butter soft, and you can help yourself there. But all Drinking Bro of the Week submissions, go to drinkingbros.com. Again, Dakota, can't thank you enough for being on the show.
Thanks so much.
You truly are one of our favorite people on the planet.
I appreciate it, man.
And if you heard this episode and you had any question if Dakota really lives this life, after that dinner we were talking about at the top of the show, I left and we see a car barreling down the driveway behind us, lights blaring, and my wife thought you were playing a joke, and I was like, no, he's probably going to a call, which you were. So not only did we have an amazing dinner and you know, let the kids play for 8 hours, you went to work as soon as that was over. And I was like, man, because Dan saw you eating cupcakes in the back.
I was.
And you had to have been full.
I didn't see him. I caught him.
You did catch me. I was trying to sneak it. Yeah. And then,
you might have been real full going to that call because we had steaks, we had burgers, we had everything. And I was like,
I was full. And then I went to that call. And then I had one more call that night. And then at midnight. And then I turned around and got up at 4 a.m. and went and worked a 48-hour shift.
Oof. Shit. So anytime you're out there and you want to shit on a first responder, go fuck yourself. This really is that life. For Dakota Meyer, D'Anthony Holloway, I am Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.